Hello and welcome to AFP. My name is Devang Desai. I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Sean Kay. On today's show, we chat Lucas Cavallini's last-second heroics, TFC's impressive performance in Nashville, the MLS secondary transfer window, Jesse Marsh's Leeds United, States of America, good Lord, MLS All-Star with Kamal Miller, a great interview that David was able to get for us in Minnesota, Jonathan David's brace to open up League One, plus we open the mailbag for another edition of Ask AFP. I buried the lead. David, thank you, sir, for joining us from Minnesota, home of the 2022 MLS All-Star Game. You found a bar to duck into to record this week's show. We appreciate y'all.
I did. Shout out to Blackheart, the owner, Wes. I think many people know from social media. He covered Minnesota United for a while. I think he still does the 551 podcast, and he owns a bar right next door, which is a gay sports bar. So it is exactly what you think it is. I'm currently staring at a picture of a painting of Vladimir Lenin in makeup with earrings that are loons and a Minnesota United pin on the character. So, and it says Boss Bitch right in front of it. So that's kind of my vibes right now.
That place is on the bucket list for me in terms of wanting to visit when I'm in Minnesota. Big fan of Wes as well. That is awesome. Sean, I think a record-setting MLS weekend in terms of action happening. How are you doing?
Oh, man. It was absolutely a wild weekend. And it was probably needed for everyone to take a break and have All-Star Weekend happen right now, because it just lets you sort of breathe, take it all in. But yeah, it was a lot to go through on the weekend. And then even just putting the sort of rundown for today, it was just like, spent the last, 36 hours just re-going over everything and reminding myself, like we were talking before, it's like, holy crap, Christian Benteke signed in just random time.
What a weird world
we live in.
I thought I was being pranked on multiple levels when I saw that happen, but apparently that is true. We'll get into some MLS All-Star talk a bit later, but David, I think the last All-Star game I went to, I think was 2017 in Chicago, which was quite fun. Ooh, with Alphonso Davies still there. It was, yeah. And Soldier Field, when it's full, like full and jam-packed with people, it's quite a fun place to be. How are the vibes so far?
The vibes are good. I think All-Star and MLS, I think I already said this like last week or two. It's a weird event. It's unique. What's, I think, been cool so far this week is it feels like people in Minnesota are excited that it's happening. They're excited to sort of showcase their city on a global scale. And they seem pretty locked in, where last year, all the excitement was a large Latino population in LA excited about League MX All-Stars. And in 2019, it was a lot of people excited about Atletico Madrid. 18 was Juve. Obviously, you said 17 was Real Madrid. So, like, each All-Star game has different vibes based off the market. And, like, some markets, MLS is super relevant. Some market, MLS isn't that relevant. Some markets are geared towards the opponent, like, whatever it is. This one feels different because it does feel like what I think an All-Star game of the other leagues in North America feel like when they come into their market of, like, it's just the big event that everyone's talking about.
And I think there's some unity being displayed by the MLS players as well. And maybe that's heightened by the fact that they are playing the Liga MX All-Stars. And there's something else on the line that has been this long-running debate about the quality of the leagues and how far along MLS has come. So I think that they've increased the stakes properly, Sean.
I think something that I love about, and I use this very like smaller markets, is that it feels like it takes over the entire city. There's times where in Toronto or New York or even Chicago, and even in Atlanta when I was there in 2018, like it just didn't feel like you were took over the place. Whereas like in Portland or like Minnesota, like I feel like that everywhere you go, you're just gonna feel MLS All-Star or MLS Cup Final or what have you. And that makes it so special. And it's just the way I think of All-Star is like it's MLS's opportunity to have like their Comic-Con, a place where you can sort of touch and like you see podcasts doing live shows and you get to go see fans interacting with each other. It's a really nice, interesting thing. And when you take outside of the game itself, it's a great weekend for fans to go down and check it out.
This isn't breaking news because this isn't really news and I'm not breaking it, but I was at a scrum earlier with Commissioner Don Garber, and someone asked him something about the future for All-Star opponents, and he did say with Leagues Cup and Campeones Cup and CCL, this may not be the format forever in terms of the League MX All-Stars being the opponent, and they haven't decided yet. So enjoy, I think, this year is what I'm saying, because, like, I think this is really cool, and I kind of assumed this was just it now. Like, this is what we'll do every year.
Yeah.
And so I was a little surprised to hear that, and I think he meant more we're not locked in rather than we're thinking about something else. But I think it could be interesting. I just got off the stage with Charlie Davies and Eddie Pope. They both feel very strongly about East versus West. Do you guys care?
Yes. Yes.
Sean cares,
Let's
right?
Go.
I generally have an anti All-Star game take. Like, it doesn't matter what the league. I'm not totally in favor of it. I feel like it's kind of jammed in there, and especially what the NHL is doing now, I have zero care what is happening with the selection process and the divisions playing each other. It just doesn't move any sort of needle for me, but I think this format for me does hold some promising intrigue. I can understand why Garber is a bit apprehensive maybe, though, because there's just going to be too many games.
It's a lot of games. It's also such a big league now, Sean. Like, you can't get all the All-Stars in an All-Star one team.
Right.
That's exactly it. You've got so many what-ifs or who's, and I think the league is just so big and the stars are so powerful now. Like, we'll get into it later in the episode, but, like, that laundry list of who came in this last window, it itself could be a starting 11 for most, like, places. So it's incredible that we've got ourselves in this spot. And then on top of it, and I know that I don't need to measure up against other leagues, and that's something that I've done my entire life, but it's like, be confident in who you are as a product, especially after being 25. Like, we're past the new league trying to attract. Like, you're almost in 30 years of a league. Be proud of your stars. Your stars are big. You don't need to bring in another market in this time. And I think that if you pick the right markets, you can sell out an All-Star game that has a Gareth Bale and a Lorenzo Insigne and, like, a Carlos Vela. Like, it's just, there's enough star power to push the meter.
Before we get to the show, and there's a lot to get to, so we should try to do that. Want to thank our new Patreon member, Martin Bailey. As everyone should know, Martin is a walking encyclopedia for Canadian national team stats, TFC stats, CPL stats. Martin, thanks so much for the support in the show.
Was Martin the one who emailed about the Francophone games or tweeted? Was that him?
No, that was Colin Crawford.
Okay.
Crawford.
Shout out to Martin then. I appreciate you. If that was Martin, I would have been like, forget Martin.
Well, if you are like Martin and want to join the Patreon, what you'll get is access to our Discord chat where we're talking footy all the time, including on Saturday for what was just a bonkers day. And there's other non-footy stuff in there as well, as we're just kind of talking about whatever. Plus, you get the show ad-free and you get it early when we record on Tuesday. So head on over to patreon.com/footballpodcast and support us today. Coming up after the break, we dive into that week of MLS soccer. It was a good one.
Now Jaden Nelson. Zuria makes a run into the box. Bernadeschi turning. And with a man outside him in Larea. And this cross will pick out Osorio. He scores his second of the night, and Toronto second. And just before the break, Bob Bradley's side are back in front at Judas Park. It's Nashville 1, TFC 2.
For the past few weeks, we've been joking about TFC's pass it to the Italian strategy, but maybe now we could put some respect on the Canadians that are a part of TFC. Pass it to the Canadians, Richie Larea to Jonathan Osorio. Richie is back. Think of all the MLS deadline day moves, not hard to imagine things falling through the cracks. I think Richie's return to Toronto maybe didn't generate the biggest headlines, DG, and yet I think in terms of the impact this will have, I'm not saying it's on the level of Bernadeschi and Insigne, but it's not that far behind. They desperately needed an upgrade at right back this season, and I think they've got it.
It was a home run, you're right, in terms of what tools they had to upgrade and their needs. I don't think he'll have the same impact as Bernadeschi and Insigne. Sorry, Devang. I apologize. I love Rich.
The audacity.
That just feels like a lot.
In my defense, though, I feel like right back, along with the center backs, has been probably the most glaring thing for me this season in terms of seeing where potentially they needed to upgrade.
Yeah, 100%. If we were talking about Kamal Miller, then maybe I'd feel differently because it's just a right back's ability to affect the game. And I think you saw from Richie how much he can defensively, maybe not as much. But I do think, and you talk about Oso, like, this is the pitch. This is why team building matters of like, yeah, Insigne and Bernadeschi are so good. The focus is so much on them. It's opening up space centrally for Oso to work, right? Normally defenses wouldn't spread themselves out so much, but they don't want to give Bernadeschi and Insigne space to either pick their head up wide or start to pick up speed coming at them. And so they're spreading themselves wider, and Oso's finding it, which is why they're so important, but they can't do it by themselves. You still need that other talent on the field, and Oso's showing that once again, that he understands how to play it, right? He's done it with the national team now, with Davies and David and Eustachio. He obviously did it with Bradley and Jovinko and Josie and all those guys as well. And I think I have said 55 times on this show, I think he should be a DP for another team next year. I think he's on that level, but you're seeing him, again, understand where he can affect the game around stars like that.
Just about every box was ticked from this game. From TFC's perspective, I think winning on the road is just something they haven't done in a very long time. 378 days is a freaking long time to not have a win on the road, but the Osorio brace, Bernadeschi cementing himself as the penalty taker with just a howitzer. I don't think any keeper is saving that. And then the signature Insigne goal, which I think we have been waiting for. I think of these things, to me, though, the Bernadeschi's passion has surprised me the most. Mm-hmm. And I think the team is feeding off of him. And it's been a pleasant surprise. I know he's making a ton of cash, but I still maybe didn't expect that. And it's been nice to see.
Yeah, it's the dream, right? Like, that's the big question, is how much do they care, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I can't even imagine a way he would prove he cares more than like the level of intent and interest.
The scream,
and
the guttural, scream as well after scoring. I'm like, this guy, where's the linen suit? Because they got to sell that on every street corner in Toronto now. Sean, I'm curious, this window, a lot of movement. A hell of a lot of movement. And I think we've been talking about TFC just kind of changing the full squad basically in just over a year. Of the moves, which one has intrigued you the most, maybe?
Yeah, obviously you gotta say Bernadeschi is the one that sort of did it. But I will say, the more and more you watch the game in the last few, it's like how much Marc-Anthony Kaye can put his stamp on this team and sort of protect that back line, because as good as they looked going forward, there were still some really bad mistakes going on in the back. A few goals that were really questionable defending, and you got to assume that at some point Daniil Henry does get the shout after he comes up to speed and sort of replaces maybe Lucas McNaughton. Just there's a few times in the pitch where I just think that he was a little outmatched and a little muscled off the ball pretty too easily. And so, yeah, but I think once again, that back line needs protection. And I think Marc-Anthony can provide the ability to once again, open up the field for everybody else. So as well, like once again, Bernadeschi is the guy, but Marc-Anthony Kaye can really turn this squad from a goal scoring powerhouse to like a playoff. If they make it to the playoffs, a team that can go a long way because they're closing up shop. Because as we know, once playoffs hits, you really got to make sure that mistakes on the back end don't happen as often as they do, especially for Toronto.
Just when I thought I was out, they drew me back. Playoffs, Jim Mora voice, playoffs.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, there's a million teams in the East that are around that line. It's quite jarring how jam-packed it is.
I would bet that TFC will not make the playoffs if I was gambling. But of all the teams outside the playoffs, at least in the East, because I think Seattle's out in the West, I would put money on TFC winning MLS Cup over any of those other teams, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, totally. I see it. And I mean, the journey continues. Portland coming to BMO Field next, but we're looking at the
red
final few
Portland.
Games. They red hot, and they TSC kind of not controls their own destiny, but they fortunately play some of those teams in front of them as well. So let's see if they can maintain that momentum. Speaking of momentum and a team rolling with the punches, the Vancouver Whitecaps missing a ton of players as a COVID-19 outbreak. Yes, COVID is still happening, people. Really shorthanded the squad against Houston, but they found a way. I liked a lot of moments in the final few minutes when they rescued this game, but Cavallini's celebration with the crowd and Vanni Sartini just collapsing. I'm like, he turned it around. Lucas Cavallini truly did. And we were quite down on him and quite down on what has been able to do for Vancouver, but this is what they wanted, David. This is exactly the person they thought they were getting. And instead of finesse or maybe trying to massage the ball into the goal, he just rocketed it past Clark, and that was enough. Quite the scenes, and maybe enough to turn things around for a team that has, like I said, been decimated by injuries.
It's almost like, I don't know how to word it, but it's almost like they're better in situations like this, where there is no expectations on how they play, right? Because the COVID issue is the biggest issue, or because they have restricted crowds, or they're playing on short rest. Like, that feels like the way Vanni Sartini galvanizes them in moments like this, when the style expectations are off, but the pressure can still be on to get performances or results, is almost where Vancouver's at their best. Like, I came out of this game being like, this is a turning point. This is a huge moment in the season. And other people came out and they're like, they played bad. It's like, yeah, but they had no one available. Not no one, but Kubas was out, right? Brian White was out, some big names. And they put in the performance they put in. One of the tactical things I thought was really interesting was one of Vanni Sartini's big attacking changes towards the end was to slide Julian Gressel higher up the field and bring on an actual right back or right wing back. Maybe I don't remember if he shifted Jermaine Brown out wide or brought someone else on to play that role. And you saw Gressel like starting to cover the whole field, back heels linking up with players. And he came into the league as a winger and a center forward out of college and became a right back and a right wing back. So I thought that was an interesting way to sort of use the pieces they have available to them. And it just feels like when you look at the grouping of teams that Vancouver's around, there's the most momentum and positivity around Vancouver.
Controversial take, but the West is bad, David. I'm just going to put it out here. The Western Conference isn't great. Not to be a hater.
You think the West is worse than the East?
Well, I think, and you kind of touched on this, but I think like there's more interesting players, there's more interesting teams. I understand it's pretty tight in the West in terms of the race, and that'll be exciting, especially some of the teams that are around that line and looking at the stakes being extremely high for your Galaxies and your Sounders. I get it. But generally, this game left me thinking, the Western Conference, man, not having it.
I think I can understand that. I think from a top tier point of view, obviously LAFC is in a tier of their own. But like in the East, you can go all the way down to Montreal. You could, if you wanted to, go all the way down to Columbus, which I think people feel comfortable doing already. Some people would argue you could go down to Cincinnati now that Matt Miazga's through the door. And I think you could argue all of those teams are better than a Dallas or a Minnesota or an RSL, right? So I think in terms of depth of quality, the East is better. But having the Sounders at eighth, Devang, is like,
right?
You know it's the Sounders.
And feel free to send me accusations of East Coast bias. I fully understand what I'm saying here.
Yeah, as a New Yorker, Devang, I'm disgusted by your East Coast bias.
You go to Minnesota for one day and suddenly look at our guy.
You think we're not here in flyover country? You think we don't exist?
It did look like they unlocked something with Gressel, which is obviously the win being really important. I think that going forward is also a reason for positivity if you're a Whitecaps fan. And I mean, the goal that was conceded, I didn't think was super great, but I don't think Cody Crawford is doing a bad job back there. I think they might have found someone to ride with through the rest of the season. So we'll see what happens next. A ton of big games for them coming up, including a 6-pointer at the Galaxy. The Galaxy, oh boy, we'll talk about them in a bit, but it's not looking great over there.
One shout out real quick, Ali Ahmed. I think he made his second ever appearance for the first team. He plays on Vancouver Whitecaps too. He's a Toronto-born kid. His parents immigrated to Canada. It's a great story. He is an incredible, like, person when you see him speak or do interviews or whatever. So anyone who doesn't know him, they're converting him from a 10 to a left wing back. And he got on the field and gave them some minutes. But I'm stoked to see him out there. And everyone should know his name, especially people that listen to this pod.
Another Toronto native that doesn't play for Toronto
100%. FC. 100%. I think he spent 2 weeks in the TFC Academy or something like that.
Just raising my eyebrows slightly. Moving on. CF Montreal, Miami. A tough week for CF Montreal in the sense that I think that win over the Crew was massive. And that's kind of what the top teams do. And we've been saying for quite a while that CF Montreal has the looks of a top team. But I think that you can call what happened against Inter Miami a bit of a slip up, especially the equalizing goal, not painting a pretty light on anyone defensively for Montreal. But I think this is still a solid run being put together, five games unbeaten, Sam Piette playing a big role and finding minutes maybe harder to come by. I wonder what this year means for him, David, because like he's not a starter for the national team, but he's probably going to go because he's showing that he's useful enough, he's versatile enough to be able to be plugged in a big moment and handle the situation.
I think it's kind of credit to him to sort of accept his reality and then find the best in it, rather than demand to move to another team or sort of put up a stink, both with the national team and with the club. It feels like he has sort of accepted what's best for the club and then found minutes. And they're not the same player. They're not on similar levels. But you remember with Patrice, that's sort of what happened as well, right? It was like as he aged, he accepted his role. And in doing that, he stayed a major part of the club and the team. And then there was a ton of moments where it turned out he was the safest option, or he was the best option to be put back on the field in big games, in finals, in semifinals, in things like that. And I think we're seeing something similar now with Piette, which is, like you said, locker room guy. He's a guy that coaches can trust. I just talked to Greg Berhalter yesterday, a little off air, and sort of one of the things he said was, like, in picking this roster of 26 guys, like, they're locked in a hotel for 6 to 8 weeks together.
Right.
And like
it helps if they're not jerks. Yeah, it helps if they're not jerks.
Yeah, exactly. The group matters a lot, especially for fringe guys where no one's 100% obviously deserves the spot. And so I think Piette's in that, and I'm not surprised he's going to be on the roster, but I'm surprised we're, like you said, we're having the conversations we're having right now.
Another highlight, of course, Ray Hudson calling this game, which I thought was a pleasant surprise. I wasn't expecting that. I still love the shtick. I love it all. It's a joy to hear him.
It's fun. It's also funny when it's MLS where it's like, you know, you hear it all. It's about Messi and Ronaldo. So when he does it about Indiana Vasilev and Lapi Lapalainen,
that's what I mean. That's
you like don't expect it. And it's fun. Yeah, I agree.
That pass as soft as a bedtime kiss from mom. Fantastic.
Nice.
Next, Houston Dynamo.
The best line last week was a pass so sweet it'd make an onion cry. Or yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was great.
It's fantastic. I mean, most of the underlying stats also indicate that Montreal is quite a good team. So I think they're building well and peaking perhaps at the perfect moment as we get towards the end of the season. The Maple Leaf Heat check, Sean. Let's do it.
Let's do it. I think we've all figured it out by now. And maybe not David, though.
Have we? That's a good question.
You can use a steak reference if you want, David. But we'll start with you. Toronto FC, let's get the heat check. They're 7, 12, and 5, 26 points. 13th in the East still. 4 points back of the playoff spot, though, with 10 games remaining. How are we feeling, David?
I think one of the issues with the heat check, before I get into it, is
here we go.
This is a cross Fahrenheit Celsius podcast. So if I was doing physical heats, I don't even know what I'd go with, but I'm in Minnesota right now.
Hot
so
or
I'm,
cold. I'm, it doesn't need to
I'm
be.
Border. I'm on the border. I think the obvious answer is hot. It was a flash against the team that a lot of people respect in an environment. While weirdly has gotten easier to get results in, it's still tough in Nashville. And to come out of that game and for there to be proof of the things that were said of how Insigne and Bernardeschi and Marc-Anthony Kay and Osorio and all these guys can fit together and make a difference, for there to be proof now of it that can even in bad times be referenced back to is really positive. And so I'm going to say hot.
Devang, Vancouver Heat check, 8 wins, 10 losses, 6 draws, 30 points, 11th in the West, 3 points back, 10 games remain. How are we feeling?
Feeling hot. The shot in the arm they needed. I think the way they came back, like David said, I think this is kind of the Vancouver MO. Whether or not they can sustain this, I'm not sure. I mean, getting some of those players back, including many regular starters, would be helpful. But I'm feeling good about the Whitecaps' chances, and kind of like TFC. I mean, you're looking at their remaining schedule. Their fate is really in their hands. They're playing a lot of the teams that are around them in the standings.
And last but not least, because they are the best in Canada, David, Montreal Heat check, 12 wins, 8 losses, 4 draws, 40 points, 3rd in the East, 10 points off the playoff line, 5 points back of 1st in the East, 11 games remaining.
Scalding hot. Everything Scalding. Works for Montreal. They are winning in multiple ways. They're getting Mason Toy back. They're getting Georgi Mihailovic back. Kyoto has now set his single season MLS goals record. There's just so much going right for them. There's something I want to talk about with them, but we're going to have Kamal Miller's interview coming up, so we'll talk about it after.
Beauty. Moving on to headlines. As we had talked earlier, the secondary transfer window has come and gone, and God, what a wild few last few days it was. But the question for you is, out of all the movement over the past few weeks, which one's your favorite? Doesn't need to be the best. It's just for you. What story, impact, or whatever is your favorite? And David, you start.
Whoa. I guess I'll just be cliche and say Bale. Like, okay. I've always put him on an echelon that is the top 5 to 10 players in the world. I've always called him Ronaldo Light. Like, it's just physically the same way, right? The athleticism, the finishing, the size for a guy of his creativity, his, like, agility, all that type of stuff. And it's just dumb that he's playing in this league now, and he's playing in this league at a time when he's at that level. So all of these I could go into, but it's just, it's wild that, and it's exciting too that it's not Rooney to DC anymore, Henry to Red Bulls, where it's like, and they're going to build the team around him. It's like, and he'll come off the bench and score against RSL in the 78th minute.
I think I'm reading way too much into celebrations now, because I'm doing like Zapruder, like rewatching to see like the interactions. You could see they all like that guy. Like, there was an outpouring of, hey, we're happy you're here. And I think that's a great sign. I've been dreading this because I'm guaranteed I'm not pronouncing his last name correctly, because I think the pronunciation he's from Catalan. So it's not Ricky Puig. It's like Ricky Puig.
I just got a voice memo from a friend of mine who works in PR for the LA Galaxy. And the voice memo says, hey, ETR, my name is Ricky Pooch, not Puig.
Pooch.
You say it wrong. Thanks for having me. And like roasted us. And that's what friends have told me is there. It's, but I'm saying this as in, I don't know. It's some mix between SH and CH. It's not one or the either. It's not Pooch and it's not Poosh. But it's somewhere in between in a way that I can't make, a noise I can't make.
Well, that's my answer. The Galaxy are fascinating. I think there's some real pressure on Greg Vanney. And the profile of this move and his age and all of the Barca weirdness going on, I just thought it was quite strange, even stranger than the Benteke thing, which I think is still mega strange. But I think I'll go with Ricky and hope it works out for Greg, because the heat is on.
And the thing about the Ricky move, I'm gonna call him Ricky too, because we're
you could tell I bailed out from that situation.
Yeah, when
I
knew. 100%. But I've always asked MLS executives, like, what would it cost to get the guy at the big club who's not playing? Like, what would it cost to get guys who just want playing time or have sort of already reached that goal and now, okay, MLS is a step down, but so is Werder Bremen, or so is Everton. And they've always sort of said, like, yeah, it's more expensive than you think. Like, it would have to break all our records, and are we really going to do that for someone who's not a starter? You know, we don't know where their head is at. But this move is exciting to me, because that's a place I'd love to see. You know, I think, what, Marseille and Milan Leverkusen a bit, Dortmund, they sort of sit in that place where it's like when guys at big clubs aren't finding time or doesn't work out, they go there and then they try and go back to a big club. I've always dreamed that MLS would sort of sit in that place a little where they could come here for a year and then make their way back in.
I had visions of Nicolas Pepe ending up with the San Jose Earthquakes, but maybe not yet.
Exactly.
Moving on, this past weekend, LAFC steamrolled RSL to a 4-1 victory. Which highlight was more newsworthy, the Chiellini handball or the Gareth Bale solo effort? Devang.
Is the handball a red card?
I don't think so. But technically, they said it was in a goal-scoring opportunity, but that guy would have had a breakaway, wouldn't he?
It's a breakaway.
Yeah, that's what I didn't get. I liked the Bale goal for the vibes, and I just enjoyed the outpouring of emotion, but Chiellini does some weird stuff, man. And I guess this is just another to the list. I was talking to Sean about this before the show, but like, is this just a him thing or is him like not caring the most? But I think that's just him. That's just who he is. So I'll go with that weirdness.
Moving on, Jesse Zardes was named player of the week after a hat trick against Minnesota. He has now 5 goals in the last 5 games. What do you think Jesse needs in the last 10 games of the season to make sure he's on a plane to Qatar? David?
I mean, to make sure, I think something special. I think we're talking 7 or 8
He's
going to
fly the plane. He's got to fly the plane, basically.
Yeah. He needs 1,000 hours of practice. He needs real life. He needs simulator practice. He needs to go see Tom Cruise to make sure that he can fly under duress. But he needs, I think he needs like 7 or so goals. And I think he needs to make the playoffs. I think part of that is I just think he needs that more games to prove himself.
Right.
And so I think he needs the Rapids to extend their season closer to the World Cup.
I don't know if it's just conjecture or it's actually true, but I do feel like I'm seeing a lot of random American soccer fan tweets about strikers having a good season because they really need to pick someone to play in the front line in Qatar. So, I mean, whose name is going to come next? I think Josie is definitely coming back in the mix.
Yeah, oh, baby. Don't worry. Know. I got a Jordy Pifolk note in the next segment. Perfect. So get ready. All aboard the Pifolk train. Lastly, and I want this one to be have a lot of time to breathe, but the LA Galaxy, they've lost 6 of their last 7 regular season matches, currently sitting outside of the playoffs for 2022. If they don't find a way in the playoffs, how hot does Greg Vanney's seat get? Devang, you start first.
Super hot. I feel like there's a real battle in the market, and you look at LAFC and it feels like that's everything the Galaxy was. And I personally like Greg a lot. I'm a big fan of his, still am, but I can't imagine the pressure decreasing after being afforded the money as in terms of market or in terms of transfers. But I also wonder how much he wanted Douglas Costa or how much that was a marketing thing. I think it's just a bad situation right now. That being said, it's a young team. So I don't know maybe if that is enough maybe to ease the pressure off Greg. But I think the situation is not good.
I just can't picture them firing him after 2 seasons. And 2 seasons, I mean, obviously last year, right, I think they lost on decision day to get knocked out. It just feels so quick for a guy that you've built so much around. And when you look at Chris Klein and Jovan Karofsky, you're looking at people who have had really long leashes.
Right.
And Greg Vanney's an LA Galaxy legend, and he went to college there, and he's around there. It just feels like he's going to get a similar leash at least. And so I'd be surprised if he gets let go this offseason.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Devang, that with all of the way everything's happening, there deserves to be that pressure. And I think that pressure should exist. But in reality, I'd be shocked if that's the way it went for that team.
Well, I'm glad. Because GV forever. Best of luck to the Galaxy and Greg for figuring this out. Still a few games left, and like all or most of the teams around the line, they do have the fortune of playing teams surrounding them in the standings. So we'll see how things progress from here. When we come back after the break, the European club season is underway. Plus, we chat a little bit about MLS All-Star.
Waiting Paulo Fonseca to do what Christoph Galtier did 2 years ago. Here they come again. Down the right-hand side. Jonathan David. Head up. looking for options. Benzema in the far post. It's 2-0. We are in the third minute of the game, and Jonathan David has already hit the back of the net. What a start. 4-0. Absolutely brilliant. Stunning stuff here.
You absolutely love to see it. The European season is well underway with some pretty wild games already taking place and some revealing scorelines. We begin in France, Lille winning 4-1, but the biggest story around these parts, Johnny David opening his account early and maybe unexpectedly, considering all of the talk or what we've talked about at length on this show in terms of what's his future going to be like. Would it still be at Lille? Would he get a move perhaps to the Premier League? But he's still there, and I think we also agreed, DG, at the time, this might not be the worst thing in the world for him, because maybe it begins exactly like this when he gets his season going well early, and it now kind of builds positively towards Qatar.
And the market's depressed this year, right? Like, we're not seeing the same numbers, and just feels like if he's going to play like this, right? But if he's going to go to a World Cup and he's going to play well, like, it's then going to be his choice, and I think he'll be at a level as an established, you know, pro at the highest level to be prepared to make the right choice for, like, what is the club that he will be connected to, not the next step, the next stepping stone. Like, it's going to be the team that hopefully he's around for a while. So I think this will all work out. I am a little let down. I don't know if you saw this, but someone made a TikTok of Harry Maguire having the Manchester team stand on the wrong side of the tunnel for their walkout and then sang over it. Maguire made them stand on the wrong side, like in a like old song. It sounds like a classical song. And I wish that had been the drop. So Sean, I just want you to know that I'm sad.
Yeah, speaking of horrible vibes, Manchester United, never a dull moment. That is fantastic. I am going to seek it out immediately. But there is some positive news in the EPL. If you're a Leeds United fan or if you're an American soccer fan, because, yep, the U.S. invasion is confirmed, it's consolidated. Jesse Marsh is Leeds United. What a start for them. 2-1 winners over Wolves. Aronson, 84 minutes. Adams, 90 minutes. How'd you feel about their debut, David?
USA. 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 And the crowd rises in unison to support and salute Brendan Aronson and Tyler Adams in their endeavors as heroes of the United States. Sorry, were you talking to me? Are we talking about something? Or were you just... I was talking to myself.
Yeah. I'm blaming myself, yeah.
It's awesome. I've gotten a lot of shtick or heat over the last week or so because I said, I think what Brendan Aronson could accomplish is unprecedented in U.S. history, and everyone came back with Clint Dempsey, and Aronson didn't play as the 10 in this game, so maybe I'm wrong, but it just feels like the potential that he will be a main attacking piece and the fulcrum of a major club in England and at the Premier League level, I think is going to be new. And Tyler, he was a little bit rusty at times, but he showed the things he's elite at in counter-pressing, in understanding how to rotate possession and sort of keep it moving in that pressing system. And so it was exciting to see. And I think as an American fan, you want the least amount of pressure on Jesse Marsh so that, one, he can continue to play them and promote them, but also so that he can sort of settle in and run the team how he wants and not just in a how do we keep from getting relegated type speed.
Wasn't all good for the American products across the pond, though. Zach Steffen's Middlesbrough career not beginning as you would have hoped. Some struggles against QPR. It's interesting, I think, the move to me makes a ton of sense, and Zach has to play, and games are the most important thing. But I think also how a player is feeling and how they're doing will decidedly impact their mental state heading into such a big tournament. Where are we at in this race for that spot, Dave? Because I don't feel like Zach Steffen is the number one right now, but that could just be recency bias.
I mean, a week ago, I thought it was over. But then, yeah, I agree with you. This is the only way he can lose it. To make mistakes like this, I don't know that he will continue to, but every time he has been on the field in England, he has made a big mistake. And that starts to put him under threat more so, I think, than not playing.
It's a cold world, but that's how it works. And I mean, we'll see how much your Matt Turners of the world actually play this year as well, because I can't imagine him getting that much game time either. So that probably factors in to this conversation. Sean's guy, Jordy Pefok, the propaganda begins, SK. He's going to continue this and become the person that they've been missing at the top of the line.
I think so. I know that what he did at Young Boys and in Switzerland probably won't be turned in over in Germany as Union Berlin like struggle to keep it going. But I don't know. There's something about, you can't teach size. I think I can't believe I just used it, but like, he's just such a big target man that I think that the US could really use. But once again, when you see him in the US jersey, it's sometimes it just doesn't look right. So I don't know, David. Am I crazy to be watching Union Berlin games hoping to ride that train to Qatar?
Is there a weirder name in soccer than Young Boys? Like, has no one approached them at this point and been like,
it's tough,
could we just go with an acronym? Could we change this?
How about Young Folks, Peter Bjorn? How about a shout out to Peter Bjorn and John and just call them Young Folks?
I like that. Let's do that. I think the issue for Jordy Pefok, and I think a lot of players in the pool, and this is something I heard Greg Berhalter say a bunch yesterday in the media that he did here at All-Star and sort of chatting with him as well, is like, they've seen everyone. And as much as it matters what you do with your club, they have seen every player in the pool, in their system, in training, working as a group. And so when guys are out, there's reasons for it. And when some guys are out further, like John Anthony Brooks and Pefok, where it's not like they're getting in and out, but they're not getting minutes, like those guys are, it feels like they're in Newfoundland and everyone else is on the mainland. Did I nail that?
Sort of. Wow. I wasn't expecting that, but I think so. I think that works.
Discord will tell you very quickly, David. Don't worry.
It's more steps than just scoring goals. So for Pefok, like, for him to get in, it's scoring and having other people not. Because if Vasquez and Giassi and Abobasi or Josie and Ferreira are all scoring, he's behind them no matter what he does. Because clearly he does not affect the team the way Greg Berhalter and his staff wants.
Moving back to Canada, Daniel Jevison back in the news. I think there's high likelihood that he's probably going to be transferred during this window. It sounds like Everton could be interested, but he's also now reopened the door or kept the door open about playing for Canada, which I think is something that maybe wasn't expected. But quote, no, a decision hasn't been made yet. With that, I don't really know yet. It's a very hard decision to make, obviously, but for now, I'm enjoying it with England at the minute, but who knows, anything can happen with Canada. It's interesting to be in this spot where it's like, not the end of the world. Daniel, you do you, but also I would love to add another talented, brilliant player to the ranks.
Would you give him a spot at the World Cup if he committed?
So I don't think so. I'm not sure if that's that controversial, but I don't think I would, John. I would be apprehensive to do that. Also because of the unity within this team. And I don't think you need that.
Yeah, I think you're right, Devang. I think that this team has built a lot of camaraderie. And if we saw a guy like Daniel Jevson, who, once again, if he starts scoring goals and earns the right to get the call up, then fine.
And if Kyle Aaron is still on the bench in a few months, then I mean,
yeah. But I still think that they're in it. This is like the spot 24 or 25. But I will say that I think it'll leave a sour taste in a lot of people on the squad's mouth if you say a guy like Aaliyah Miller or just somebody who was with on the whole ride through, that was sort of ride or die and then sort of gets thrown to the side for like a hot fling. I think there'd be some guys looking sideways at sort of what this quote unquote family really was to the CSA. So I think it's a 2026 conversation.
The journey we just went on between all of Sean's, from taste and mouth to hot flings to being thrown on the side. That was an experience.
Sensual. Wowza. I mentioned Kyle Aaron coming off the bench for Club Rouge, which not a huge deal, I don't think, 3 games in, but he had options. He really did. and he had options across various countries in Europe. I mean, that's an impossible decision or really tough. And to his credit, I think he feels comfortable with linking up with Tejan and finding his new home in Belgium. But I wonder how this move will be looked at in a few weeks or a few months if he's still coming off the bench.
It's going to be tough. We are close enough to the World Cup that two friendlies and then pre-tournament, like, he could find his form through the national team still, right? And clearly he's shown that in his career, that he can show up for big moments and score goals maybe when everything else isn't going his way. But this is the last thing you want to see right now. I think Kyle Larin's one of the most important pieces in the roster, and this is worrying.
Speaking of important pieces on the Canadian team, one of the standout Canadians in MLS this season and who was rightfully rewarded with a trip to Minnesota at MLS All-Star was Kamal Miller.
Mazel tov.
Woo! David, truly loved hearing this interview that we're about to play. Kamal seems like a really cool dude.
He was great. I pulled him aside and sort of, don't tell anyone, didn't really have clearance and just was like, Kamal, you want to chat? And he's like, yeah, why not? And he was really great. It's, I think for all of us, we know doing content, it's just so nice in person. You get more in 4 minutes than you're going to get in 20 on the phone sometimes. And I thought it was interesting sort of how he sees things, but it's one of those moments where you're sort of excited through someone and hearing him talk about this experience and this honor of being an All-Star was really cool.
We'll get wonderful producer Greg to play an interview now.
Here with Kamal Miller. Kamal, let's start with this. I talked to Dane St. Clair last week. Didn't know you guys were teammates as kids. Yeah. Did you think one day the two of you would be driving into an All-Star practice together?
It's tough to say yes, but I knew we both had what it took to get to this level. So we've just been knocking down goals and crushing barriers together. We got drafted in the same class. Went to college the same year. We've kind of just been side by side the whole step of the way. So this is our biggest achievement so far, other than qualifying for the World Cup together. But yeah, we just keep crushing stuff together, and it's good. That's my boy.
Do you guys roll in and look around and you're like, U.S. players, we beat you. Mexico players, we beat you. Like, is there some smack talk now for the Canadians?
None yet. None on the first day. Maybe maybe in a few days we'll pull it out. But so far it's been good vibes, guys who I've had fierce rivalries with on the field. It's been very good. They've all been very receptive, very nice. And since it's my first time and some of them have more All-Stars under their belt, they've just been trying to help me and get me acclimated. So I appreciate it.
A big conversation around CF Montreal was obviously Georgie. He got hurt, and now you guys have remained at the top of the Eastern Conference. He's back now. Mason's back now. Yeah. What was sort of the key to keeping the team at the level, and what have you guys sort of relied on?
Just staying true to what we do. We know there's not too many teams in the league who play the way we play. So we wanted to just keep imposing our style and building it, not changing it for whoever we play or whoever comes in the house or wherever we go on the road. Just try to set the tempo with the way we play every time. And yeah, it's worked. So
tell me a little bit, Wilfred Nancy. I've not spoken with him yet. What makes him special? Sort of what do the players connect with?
I think everyone connects with his ability to relate to the players. Very calm guy, so cool. And I think that feeds off to us on the pitch. You see the way our defenders play with the ball, taking a lot of touches, a lot of high-risk stuff at the back. Some teams would never pass the ball around in their half the way we
do. You're basically a number 10 left center back.
Yeah, so it shows the trust he has in us. And yeah, what a coach to come in and do what he's done. He deserves all the credit. And yeah, he's been amazing. Been amazing for guys like me and Georgie and Alistair to help build us up. And yeah, he's looking to prepare us for the next level.
Inside the team right now in August, third in the East, what's the conversation? Is it supporter shield? Is it playoffs? Is it MLS Cup?
It's supporter shield for sure. We don't think we're too far away. We know the end of the season is going to be pretty hectic. A lot of injuries throughout the league, so the dynamic of the league is changing. A lot of new guys coming in, so we feel it's a perfect opportunity to pick up and keep going. We're going to look to finish the season strong for sure. And yeah, just keep doing what we do.
So I asked Dane this last week. He told me I had to ask you. And let me tell you, I'm wearing a hat right now because it's sunny out. I'm a bald guy. You had hair, and then you went into national team camp, and you came out looking like a Tiva. Did he pressure you into it?
Tiva? Yeah. No, 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 not at all. But a lot of people are saying I'm like, it's like passing the torch, you know, like he's on his way out of the program, and I'm just getting started pretty much. So, yeah, I've heard passing the torch a lot, and he loves it for sure. You know, like he sees a lot of himself in me, and yeah, just the fact to even be in the same conversation as a Tiva is special. So yeah, I appreciate it a lot.
Well, you can just now, if you land in Turkey, you don't even have to go through customs, right? They say you just walk around like a celebrity.
They'll think I'm him, and he's the king of Turkey. So yeah, maybe one day.
Well, congrats on the season. Congrats on the All-Star, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Great stuff, David. I love how the Bald Mafia is expanding and now growing across international borders. I love that anecdote. I loved the Dane St. Clair stuff and seeing how tight they were growing up. Another story of some Toronto guys finding their own way in MLS.
I knew that you were going to go there. So here was my question. I asked Kamal Miller, what's the goal? He said supporter shield. What reaction do you have to that? Should that be, should it, if they don't accomplish it, what's your reaction? What do you make of that being his response?
A bit surprised. It's fine to say, though. I'm not against aiming for the supporter shield, and I think there's a lot to be said for having that trophy stand up as the mark of the best team through what is a very long season. I guess no joke, but you got to be consistently great to achieve that honor. So I back it, but also, people really only remember who won the MLS Cup. I still think that's true.
Oh, I can't with that. I can't. I cannot.
Really?
I can't take. Yeah. It's just.
It's very North American of me. It's a very. But, fair.
But teams are built to win trophies. Charlie's been doing this to me all week. We were at a live show in Minnesota, and I said to the Minnesota fans, like, if Minnesota won Sporting Shield and lost the first round of the playoffs, season of failure. And people were like, no. Like, you're built to win trophies, and the Supporters Shield is a trophy, even if there is flaws in how it's made. So is MLS Cup. It's a single elimination tournament. Like, that's flawed in the way you find winners as well. I'm interested, though, because I think they're clearly a top three team. It feels like Supporters Shield is a step too far, and I understand having goals. I thought it was interesting that he went there so quickly, because clearly that's their convo, and I think that's great. But I wonder how it mentally sets them if they don't accomplish that.
I'll just say, if TFC doesn't win MLS Cup in 2017, I don't know if that team holds up as being venerated as much as they are and surely deserve.
Yeah, you're completely right. I love the supporter shield, but I would put it on the same level as a US Open Cup victory. I know that once again, there's more to it. There's 34 games. There's like a grind. It means a lot, but in a fan eye, I think it's a secondary trophy, and maybe I'm off on that, but David feels very strongly about the shield.
But like, how many trophies has Montreal won?
Not that many.
And all of the ones they've won are Canadian championships, which is great. But for the most part, the ones they've won were competitions between three teams. Right? And like, to me, if this year with Bale and LAFC and the Philly Union bringing in DPs and NYCFC, if they were Supporters Shield winners, that would be a legendary season that would be a reference point forever for people, I think, externally about Montreal. And for people in that city about their club,
it's a great argument. I mean, I totally see your point, and I think there's something to be said about a group sticking together and toughing out what might be the toughest schedule across many of the leagues. Right, like this is a lot of travel. Some of it not the most glamorous. It's a tough league to stay consistently good. So I back that, David, as well, and I admire your passion regarding the subject, but MLS Cup or bust. And that's first.
Well, one last thing before we move on. I think something that gets lost in the shield a lot of the time is I think the ability to have a moment to share with the fans that's the great thing about MLS Cup or an Open Cup or what have you is that there's a moment where the whistle goes and there's just jubilation. Whereas like half the time the cup is won on the road and it's three games left and it just, it doesn't, it doesn't have that like celebratory moment. And so because of that, I feel like that is where, and it happens in the like Premier League or in Europe, like I would say 80% of the time where it's just like, and we did it. Yes. Because it's just been coming for so long. And mm-hmm. I think that that's where the winning a league or a regular season sort of loses its, I don't know, fanfare yeah. or passion. Yeah.
I think that's fair as well. We can keep going on about this for days. And please join us on Patreon and do it in the Discord, because I think there'll be some great debate going forward. But when we come back, we wrap up this week's show with the mailbag. It's Ask AFP.
And welcome back. It's now time for Ask AFP, where Devang and David will do their best to answer all your questions. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions in through Patreon, Discord, Twitter, and we even got a Facebook question today.
Wow.
We've made it to Facebook.
I thought you were trolling with that in the notes, but wow.
No.
Did
no,
this come Clay, with Invectin or whatever?
Heads up.
Ivermectin, I believe. Jeez, yeah. Get your crazy conspiracy drugs right, yeah.
But shout out to Facebook and our Facebook following. We'll start with Jason first. He's got a bit of a long-winded question, but we'll make it quick. With Insigne and Bernardeschi arriving, they both noted the strong quality of football being played in MLS and how it's grown, but both noted that there's still a skill and a tactical gap between MLS and the top leagues like Serie A. This isn't a surprise, of course, and the dream is that MLS closes the gap, but what will it take to get there? Devang, you go first.
I don't know if we'll ever get there, and I don't think it's the end of the world if we don't. It's really hard to quantify this, right? And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can look at a game between like the 16th and 12th teams in Serie A and be like, this is excellent quality. This is high quality. I think it depends. It depends on who's playing or how the game is going. So I think we may never win this argument, and I understand it's frustrating, but I think we got to take the high road here and say it doesn't really matter.
I agree with you. If I was trying to find answers, one would be, I think just over time, if the perception of the league grows, you'll have more in prime players, right? Mm-hmm. If the Brendan Aaronsons and Tyler Adams of the world and the Tatis don't leave at 22 and come back at 32, and you have those players from 24 to 30, I think that helps. I think it's already come a really long way, I would say. I think the domestic player has grown a lot. And so like a lot of the weak spots have been lost. This is the same stuff Pirlo said, because they don't like to run. Like these guys come over and the game's not as athletic in Italy and they're old. So it's like, that's a kind of one of the points of contention there, where it's like, is someone making an okay pass at high speed actually worse than someone making the perfect pass but moving slower, right? Like I think that's sort of a perception. And as Devang says, like you have to watch it and sort of make your own decision. The one thing I would say that you could do is you could unify the surfaces, take away turf. And
yeah.
I think we're getting to the point where it will be questionable the quality of soccer in summer months in a lot of cities in MLS that have outdoor stadiums. And I don't know how you change that, right? If a game's played outside in Houston in July, like it's going to look like crap compared to a Serie A game in October.
I know the league has some big fish to fry, but climate change might be too big.
We got a quick one from out west. Andre asked, will Alexandre ever break into the Whitecaps starting 11? David?
It feels like no, with Schopf coming in, like that's a starter that's been brought in, and you already have players that people are really valuing, like a Rusty Tybert, like a Michael Baldissimo. So it just feels like it's going to be one of those moves where he's going to leave or be sent on loan, and it'll be like, yep, that happened, but did it really happen?
I mean, he had a great chance this weekend if he didn't come down with COVID, because they were missing half the team, but... I mean, Vanni Sartini's kind of mixing it up and mixing and matching, and I don't think it's impossible that he turns to Alessandre at some point, because he seems to be willing to make changes.
Now, from our dear friend at Facebook, Sean Smith, he just wants to say, hi, I'm a listener from Western Manitoba, and I have a question for Ask AFP. I was wondering if you guys ever think we'll see Canadian internationals who have had success in MLS or overseas come back to the Premier League to finish their career. And would this be a good thing or bad thing? Thanks. I really enjoy the podcast.
Well, now I feel bad about disparaging.
I was going to say, thank you, Sean, for being such a good Sean Smith.
Thanks.
For being a great person. And we appreciate you listening to the show. And we are really glad you sent a question.
100%. I think it would be a good thing. And I hope we do see it happen. I just listening to David's interview with Kamal and the way he's talking about Atiba and how much he looks up to him and how much of an influence he has on the team. Like, it would be quite fantastic if he did come back to the CPL and played for a season, in my opinion. I think we will see it too. I think as there's more teams and as the league grows, I think there's a great opportunity for this.
I agree with you. And I think the ownership piece will be big. I think people will come back to play for teams that they own to help promote them and sort of finish out their careers. Or I think one of the other things you'll see is people going to teams where they sort of ID that they can then become coaches, which I don't think is dissimilar to what Chiellini's doing with LAFC. Like, I think you'll see moments like that where it makes sense for people.
And then moving on, we have who would be in the top three of your EPL power rankings after the first week in the Premier League? David, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so number one, obviously, Leeds United. number two... no, I would say Man City still. I'd say probably Sean Kay's beloved Spuds.
Yes.
Number two, if that feels safe. And maybe I'll say Devang's beloved Arsenal, who sat back on a 1-0 lead at Crystal Palace for 85 minutes.
William Saliba is the truth. I've never been more enthused to watch a center-back pairing. But I feel like Sean included this question to goad me into picking Arsenal in the top three, and I will not do that. I'll take the different path, and I'll put Man City, Spurs as well, very impressive. And I'll put Liverpool there, but Liverpool's midfield does not inspire me that much, and I wonder if they're going to have to make some moves to shore up.
There's no depth in the area where. It felt like in the past years, it's like, oh, I forgot Thiago's been hurt, or like Henderson isn't a starter anymore. It just doesn't feel like they have the options they used to.
And lastly, we got a bit of a baseball question, but we'll make it through. Jamie asks, what's more likely, TFC making the playoffs or the Blue Jays catching the Yankees? They're 10 and a half games back. Devang, what do you think?
While I'm certain the Yankees peaked too early and something catastrophic is going to happen to them in the playoffs, I don't think the Jays are going to catch them. So I'm going to say TFC making the playoffs. It's a tough road and there's a million teams in front of them and the goal. But like David has said, I feel like if they do get in, they could definitely make some noise. So I want to see it and I'll say TFC.
I'm going to say the Mets, baby. No one asked, but the New York Metropolitans annihilated the Atlanta, I don't know their names, in a five-game series, winning four, including sweeping a doubleheader behind the back of Max Scherzer. And, of course, Edwin Diaz.
Truly good.
Let's go, Mets. Let's go, Mets.
I've seen several renderings of that video with a different song put on.
It?
Like, there's some ska. I think absolutely wonderful. I love it.
Did you see the one of the... of them people saying the FBI getting ready to raid Mar-a-Lago and then they play the walkout song.
So good. I think that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. And if you did, please give us a rating or a review wherever you get this podcast. Plus, hit us up on Twitter at A Football Pod. And of course, on patreon.com/A Football Podcast. Thanks so much for listening to AFP. For Greg, Sean, and David, we'll talk to you next time.